This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, March 22nd, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home in New York. And Taylor, go ahead. Go ahead with the Maryland bragging. I'll give the floor to you.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Yes, you were.
No, I wasn't.
Go ahead.
You scolded me on Friday for this is a baseball podcast.
No, first off, I'll be totally honest. If Vanderbilt made Sweet 16, that's what this whole podcast would be about. Okay.
You get to brag about
your victory lap.
Well, you get to brag about Jack later today. So that should fill the Vanderbilt void. But nice win by the Terps. Tough game. The Terps are just absolutely locked in defensively. We got to share our no rebounding strategy with America and kind of playing like a 80s style basketball because we have no big men. But all in all, it was a thrilling evening. They've exceeded my expectations. I'm excited that they've moved on. This, I mean, kind of makes the whole season. I didn't think they were going to make the tournament. So tough game against Alabama tonight. Hopefully they can pull it out and make it to a Sweet 16. So we'll see. Go Terps. I'm very excited. I'll leave it at that. I got a little rowdy on Saturday after the win. Just saying.
Well, I'll root for them for you and for Tim Kirkchen, who's going to be joining us later in the podcast. He's a proud alum of that. He's got a connection with another school that we'll talk about as well. First, some news and notes. Cubs minor leaguer Jesus Camargo Corrales was arrested in Colorado after methamphetamine and oxycodone was found in a team duffel bag. Police in Colorado found 21 pounds of meth and 1.2 pounds of oxy in his Cubs duffel bag. He's facing a class one drug felony, as well as charges of unlawful possession of each drug, both class four drug felonies. Joey Votto is back with the Cincinnati Reds after his bout with COVID-19. He's unsure about whether or not or when he's going to be coming back. The Kansas City Royals agreed to a four-year extension with Salvador Perez, 4 years, $82 million now with his deal. Arizona Diamondbacks relief pitcher Tyler Clippert sprained his right shoulder. He is out indefinitely. 36 years old, he's thrown in 777 career games, which ranks second among active major league pitchers. The Cleveland Indians sent struggling outfielder Oscar Mercado to the minor leagues. Remember, he was so promising 2 years ago, then struggled during the short season last year, and now they want him to work on some things in the minor leagues. The Washington Nationals, Will Harris has a blood clot in his throwing arm. He left the Nationals camp to be examined by a specialist. Let's get to the good stuff from the young.
3-1. Swing, and this is clobbered out to right field. Back, 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 and gone. Jared Kelnick going yard out to right field.
Jared Kelnick of the Seattle Mariners hitting a home run, which is only going to enhance that conversation about when he is going to reach in the big leagues. There's also some good stuff from an old guy.
Hard to communicate just how unusual this is. Swings of the first pitch from Guerrero and launches it to deep left field. Ruda's going back, looking up, going to go. Albert got what Albert wanted. And that was the big swing here. Angels are on the board. A solo home run for Pujols, his first of the spring, and a 4-1 Padre lead in the ninth.
Future Hall of Famer Albert Pujols with the home run. And in Florida, we saw a battle of aces. Guys will pitch against each other on opening day. Jacob DeGrom against Max Scherzer. And DeGrom got the better of it.
Been trying to work the count. Here's the wind. And the 3-2. He got him. Swing and a miss. Struck him out on the slider. Now the kick and the pitch. Fastball. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. A high hard one at 101 miles an hour. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss. Struck Max
Charlie
out.
Charlie Flo is on the Nationals Radio Network. Yeah, DeGrom. 101 miles per hour. I'm going to be talking with Tim about his increased velocity from DeGrom and about the choices by the managers of the respective teams to throw these guys against a team. There's teams they're going to see in just 11 days. And did you hear about this from Saturday?
Jack Leiter's moment is here and now. A Vanderbilt no-hitter.
Really cool. Jack Leiter, ESPN's number two Major League Baseball draft prospect, tossed a no-hitter on Saturday in the Commodores' 5-0 win over South Carolina. He walked a batter in the first inning before recording 27 consecutive outs, and he finished with a career-high 16 strikeouts. Now, before we get to Tim to talk about that, Evan Grant of the Dallas Morning News, to continue with our American League West previews, we'll be talking about the Texas Rangers, and we'll be hearing from Andrew McCutchen, Don't miss the biggest, baddest rematch in UFC 260 as heavyweight champion Stipe. Oh, boy. You got to help me out here, Taylor. You can read the name.
Stipe Miocic.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. And number one contender?
Francis Ngannou.
Thank you. They meet for the second time. UFC 260 on March 27th is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99. Visit ESPNplus.com/PPV to order and check out ESPN's newest podcast, Daily Wager. Daily Wager is a podcast for all your information on tonight's games and the biggest plays. Listen to Daily Wager every weekday afternoon, wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkchen.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkchen covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, through the years, you've gotten to know Dayton Moore, the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, very well. Well, first off, how are you doing?
I'm great. Syracuse won last night. Both our kids went to Syracuse, so I watched that intently. Maryland's playing tonight. That's where I went. So if they win, then I'll be 100% ready to go to start the baseball season on April the 1st, which I already am.
Right. So you're bragging about basketball, okay? I'm just your alma mater, your kid's alma mater. I'm just going to pay that back to you a little bit later, okay?
Yeah, well, I'm sure you are, given what your alma mater did over the weekend.
All right, so I just was saying that Dayton Moore, general manager of the Kansas City Royals, somebody you know well, I know well. Here was Dayton Moore at the press conference yesterday when they announced the extension for Salvador Perez.
It's not often that you get a chance to have press conferences like this, where you get a chance to reward and celebrate a player like Salvador Perez, who he is as a person, what he means to this game of baseball, what he means to the organization, our fans. It's a special day to be able to celebrate that.
Salvador Perez turns 31, Tim, this year. And you know, as well as anybody, that catchers in years are like dog years in terms of the toll it takes on their body. And I bet you that there were analysts, well, I know this, there were analysts around baseball going, I don't know, 4 years, $82 million, that's a risk for the player or for the team. And I don't know exactly what conversations took place between Dayton Moore and the Royals ownership, but I bet you there's a good chance that he went to them and said, look, this is an employee who has earned the right to be taken care of. He's been terrific earlier in his career. He played on a very team-friendly contract. Let's get this done. What do you think?
Right. Dayton Moore, as we know, Buster, is as loyal an executive as you'll ever find. And maybe after they won the World Series, he kept that team together a little too long, but he did it out of loyalty. He felt they had one more shot with Lorenzo Cain and the rest of those guys. And that's who Dayton Moore is. The way he used to talk about Eric Hosmer and Alex Gordon was just so great for people to understand how important those guys were to the growth of the Royals. And that's who Salvi Perez is also. They have grown up with him, and he's still a really good player, Buster. And the amazing thing about him is how big he is behind the plate. And maybe that size is going to work for him this time. Normally that size for a catcher works against you, but maybe because he is so big and so strong that he'll be able to last a little bit longer in the big leagues as a catcher. I think he will. When he was growing up in Venezuela, he told me that when he used to go to tryout camps, it's like a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old to play little league baseball. If you were too big for your age group, they wouldn't let you play. So he told me he used to always have to crouch down, like in team pictures or at tryouts, so people didn't realize he was a head taller than everybody else. So that's ended up how his career began as a catcher, the biggest guy on the field. But you talk to those Royals pitchers and they'll tell you, not only does he present the best target back there, but that enormous size covers the whole plate and pitchers are very comfortable throwing to somebody who's that big behind home plate.
Dayton said to me a few years ago when they were going through the last stretch when Mike Moustakas was with the team, look, if we stop looking at this game through the lens of what we imagine an 11-year-old thinks, then we're all in trouble. And I think that he is someone, you know, in an era when there's so many analysts, it's just the cold, hard numbers and what makes sense for the team financially, what doesn't. I think Dayton looks at baseball as being a product, like that you're trying to sell to your fans. And Salvador Perez is someone who's going to come back year after year after year in retirement and throw out opening pitches. And while, again, at the back end of the contract, there's no question for a catcher, there's a lot of risk. I think Dayton looks at it as we're trying to sell a product to our fans, and this guy's an important part of that.
Right. And Dayton's also the guy. I had a long talk with him not too long ago about, you know, minor league players. We don't have as many as we used to. And he said that's a bad thing. He said those minor league players, even if they don't play in the big leagues, end up being major league managers, major league coaches. And it's very important to keep as many of those guys around. And the Salvi Perez's of the world are the exact guys that you want to keep around for the long run. And go ahead, Buster, look at his numbers versus Yadier Molina's numbers through age 30. They're pretty darned impressive and pretty close to Molina, who's going to be a Hall of Famer someday. It's a really interesting comparison to where Salvi Perez was at 30, where Yadier Molina was at 30.
And I hope that more and more people in this sport, and I'm talking about people in Central Baseball, people with teams, people in leadership at the union, look at the sport more the way Dayton does, as a product that you're trying to present to folks that you hope are baseball fans for their entire life. All right, so the number five spot in the Dodger rotation is up for grabs. Tony Gonsolin is one of the candidates going for that. And Tim, here's what it sounded like yesterday.
He gets a swing and a miss and his first strikeout of the day. Swings and misses at the changeup, and Gonsolin with an uneventful 1-2-3 first. That is on the outside corner to get Slater, and I don't mean to take the replacement.
So Joe Davis, Oral Hershiser on the Dodgers broadcast. There was a lot of sounds of the catcher's mitt popping yesterday, Tim, as Tony Gonsolin was throwing. Here was Gonsolin and Dave Roberts after the game talking about the performance.
I was trying to throw a lot of strikes, you know, I'm trying to throw strikes with all pitches, attack the zone, you know, try to stay ahead of guys and, you know, ultimately not walk them.
Tony was really good. You know, I think he threw, you know, near 70 pitches and, you know, he made two mistakes with the fastball, the one to Longo and then the one to Yaz. But outside of that, I thought the slider, the change, fastball, command, really good today.
So this spring, Tim, Tony Gonsolin has 12 strikeouts and no walks, 3 runs allowed and 10 in the third innings. And he's going for the fifth spot in the Dodgers rotation because, of course, they have Clayton Kershaw at number 1. They got Walker Buehler at number 2. They got Trevor Bauer at number 3. Julio Urias, I think, is going to be the 4. And then for that 5 spot, you got Gonsolin. You might have Dustin May. You might have Jimmy Nelson. And, oh, by the way, you've got a Cy Young Award. David Price. Nice choices for Dave Roberts.
You know, Buster, last year, 2 rookie pitchers pitched 40 or more innings and had an ERA under 3. 2 rookie pitchers. Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin. Go look at Tony Gonsolin's walk strikeout rate last year. It was ridiculously good. And when I asked Trevor Bauer during these thematics that we've all done this spring, give me the best pitcher at using all the Dodger stuff. And typical Trevor Bauer knew exactly what to say. First thing he said was, I'll take Tony Gonsolin's changeup. That's where he started. That's how good it is. And if he's battling for your fifth starter spot and those other guys are in the top eight, I've said it before, Buster, no team is even close to having eight, at least seven or eight major league starting pitchers like the Dodgers do. And their fifth starter is going to be better than the third starter, even the second starter on some teams. That's how deep the Dodgers are. And Tony Gonsolin is one reason why.
And I'll ask the question again to you. Do you think that this Dodger team is going to potentially threaten those benchmarks that we saw with the 1998 Yankees, 114 wins, the 2001 Mariners with 116? Because I do.
Well, they are so loaded, Buster. Look, I'm not going to 110 with them because they got to play the Padres 19 times and they have to play the National League East, which is pretty stout. And they're, you know, the Cardinals are pretty good too. So I'm not going 110 with the Dodgers, but I'm getting darn close to that because there is no weakness on this team. Their pitching from 1 to 13 is ridiculous. Their defense is good and they hit the ball out of the ballpark with better than any team in the National League. And that's how you win.
Shohei Ohtani, the Angels, was in the lineup yesterday leading off. Oh, and he was pitching. Here's what it sounded like his day.
Shohei Ohtani will stand into the left-handed batter's box. Here's the 1-0 from Snell. Lefty-lefty against Ohtani. And he just rips it out to left center field. That'll be a base hit. So Ohtani is now all warmed up, ready to go. His pants are already dirty from that slide into second base. Here's Ohtani's pitch to Tatis, and it is tipped into the catcher's mitt. Strike three. 0-2 on Myers, and Will waves and misses. Strike three. 0-2. He's just tracking, and he takes on the outside corner. Strike three called.
His off-speed stuff was absolutely ridiculous. He gets that hit to start the game for the Angels. Tim, how much did Joe Maddon like writing out that lineup with Ohtani leading off and pitching?
Well, not as much as I love reading that lineup, Buster, because I am just hopelessly addicted to box scores. Things just jump out when you look at box scores. And to see Ohtani pitcher first, or Ohtani one, however you want to look at it. We've never seen that before. I've never seen that before. And I love a box score where I look at it and say, wow, that doesn't look right. I've never seen that. That's what it was. But it just speaks to how versatile that guy is. He can draw a walk. He can lead off with a triple. He can hit a ball out of the ballpark. Athletic people usually hit leadoff. And no pitcher that I could ever remember has ever hit leadoff until yesterday. So that was really cool to see. And in the bigger picture, he's so critical to that team. What, Buster, if he becomes the pitcher we think he can become? Suddenly, the Angels have a slightly different look if he's indeed the ace of their staff, who's also going to hit 4 or 5 days a week.
Yeah, when we did those interviews with players, Justin Upton said to me, he said that he thought Ohtani was probably the fastest guy in the team. Mike Trout, when I asked him what he's capable of, he said 10-plus wins as a pitcher, 30-plus home runs. And along the lines of what we were talking about with Dayton Moore and looking at the game as a product, you know who might be pitching that first Sunday night game for the Angels? I got my fingers crossed the way the Angels' rotation might line up. Mr. Ohtani.
Well, that would be wonderful. And Joe Maddon is the type of guy who recognizes opening night, Sunday night, whatever it is. This is the guy to pitch a big game like that when everybody is watching. Joe has an understanding of the theatrical part of this, and there's nothing better than Ohtani on national TV pitching in a big game.
So yesterday, Nationals and Mets played, and pitching for the Nationals was Max Scherzer. For the Mets, it was Jacob DeGrom. Those two guys will be pitching against each other on opening day. And Tim, I love the fact that neither manager hid these guys from the other team, because it's not as if there are really any secrets about Scherzer and DeGrom now among hitters.
Right. And the reason they don't have to hide them, Buster, is it doesn't matter how many times you see DeGrom, especially these days, you can't hit him when he's right. It's that simple. There are no secrets here. Everybody knows what he's going to throw. And some people know when he's going to throw it, but his stuff is so good, they can't hit him anyway. Usually hide somebody who's got a trick pitch or something new, you know, try to sneak one through. Neither one of those guys, Scherzer or DeGrom, is tricking anybody. They're coming right at you. Everybody knows what's coming and they still can't hit it. And that's the definition of a great pitcher. And both of those guys are right now.
So yesterday I wrote a piece for ESPN.com about Jacob DeGrom's increase in velocity and how remarkable it is that you have a pitcher, you know, is in his early 30s now. His velocity jumped up about 4+ miles per hour over the last 4 years. And Tim, I always used to think of a guy that you know well, Nolan Ryan, as having the perfect pitcher's body because he was so strong and he was compact and he had those incredibly strong legs, the butt in which he'd drive toward home plate and he could throw up to 100 miles per hour. Now I'm beginning to rethink that for this generation. I'm thinking Jacob DeGrom might have the perfect pitcher's body because he's so angular and he's got these levers. He's like a human catapult. And you know, I was texting last week with Jeremy Hefner, their pitching coach of the Mets, and he mentioned that as time has gone on, you know, DeGrom is tall and he's so lean and he's learned how to get maximum efficiency out of that delivery. Tell me what you see in DeGrom.
Yeah, that's what I see. And I remember my dear friend Jim Palmer telling me many years ago, he said, the best build for a pitcher, typical Jim Palmer, who I love, he said, is like me, long and lean. And that's exactly who Jacob DeGrom is. Over recent years, some of our pitchers have gotten too tight, too compact, too strong, instead of being long, lean, and lanky like DeGrom. And Buster, there's no denying this. It also really helps that he was a shortstop, which makes him wildly athletic. And even though he's had his share of arm injuries, this guy has not been throwing off a mound every single day since he was 7 years old. I think that's part of the reason that he's throwing harder now in his 30s than maybe he did even 10 years ago. It's because he hasn't used up all those bullets that some of our pitchers do now from age 7 on. He was playing another position. He was throwing from different angles. He was athletic doing it. So I think that's part of the reason he's still throwing this hard at this age. Nolan Ryan was a complete bionic man in every way, and those legs carried him. But this build for DeGrom is really, really good.
Yeah, you're pretty much wrong about everything else, but you're completely right about that.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. How about Jack Leiter of Vanderbilt on Saturday? I think Vanderbilt's covered with their number one and number two starters between Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, which is going to kick off a conversation. Which guy would you rather have? Which is like, you know, choosing between two diamonds. And I'd say this, I do like Leiter's delivery, since we were just talking about that with DeGrom, a little bit more than I like Rocker's, but man, you'd love either guy.
Yeah, so I think now Nolan Ryan and Scherzer are the only pitchers ever to strike out 16 or more in a no-hitter, and that's what Jack Leiter did. And I'll take both of those guys any day, but I'm also a big believer in heredity and genes and everything else. And for Jack Leiter to come from Al Leiter and Mark Leiter, that's a pitching family. And that's gonna really have some legs to it. That kid has a great delivery. And I think he got all 16 strikeouts on fastballs the other day. And man, he was just firing. And I love that they sent him out for the ninth inning, you know, after whatever, 113 pitches, because he's a young college kid who's pitching once a week. He can do this. And that was breathtaking to watch a college kid do something like that.
All right, Tim, thanks for doing this.
Okay, Buster, see you soon. Go Vandy.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
So I get a chance to talk with Andrew McCutchen of the Phillies. Rapid fire.
Biggest thing you learned from 2020?
To just have a bigger appreciation, just have appreciation for everything with the game and outside of it. So family, spending time with them, them actually being able to have to come to the ballpark to see you, watch you play, the fan base, appreciating the ups and downs, the good, the bad, the cheers and the boos, like all of it. Just having an appreciation for all of it because, yeah, it was a different just beast last season. So it's just for me, it's just like, you know, just showing up every day, having an appreciation for it.
Now you're a Renaissance man anyway, but during the shutdown, tell me about some hobby or maybe a skill that you developed.
I've always loved time with my kids. But I think one of the biggest things for me was like production, TV, you know, so having the little Uncle Larry thing, being able to show more of my silly side, because a lot of people don't always get to see that. They see bits and pieces or they see a still picture of me smiling or laughing. And it's just like, I do that all the time. So yeah, being able to bring people into that world of silly Andrew was fun for me. So that was kind of it wasn't new. It was something I always used to do, but to actually go out of the way and create a character and do all of that was, it was fun. It was fun, you know, just having time to be able to do things like that and not just sit around and, you know, think about the actuality of things that were going around.
We'll have to string some of that together on for Sunday Night Baseball night this year. How important was it for the Phillies to re-sign JT Realmuto?
Very important. You know, you don't have, many chances in this game to where one person can really take the game over. You know, it is such a team dynamic with this game, but I feel like, you know, there's the pitcher and then there's the catcher. And, you know, those are two very pivotal pieces that we need. And I think with JT, getting him back was something of great importance. We really needed that because he really does change it. He turns things around for us and he can change the game. And he's shown that. He's shown that in these last couple of years. And yeah, I was really excited to be able to play with him again.
Describe how competitive the National League East will be.
It's going to be very, very competitive. I mean, you know, you look from top to bottom. Pitching staffs are amazing. The starters, you know, from the Mets to the Marlins, it doesn't matter. They got some big live arms, you know, through every team, through every single team. So it's gonna come down to probably who knows. It's gonna be close if everyone in the division just stays healthy. It's gonna be fun, competitive, but I wouldn't have it any other way because you know, it keeps you on your toes and keeps you playing at the top of your level. So I'm looking forward to the competition And I'm looking forward to opening up against the Mets.
Describe the Phillies lineup.
The lineup is from top to bottom. It's a lineup where the opposing pitcher, he can't breathe. That's the way I look at it. We have a very dynamic staff as far as the lineup goes. I mean, it's going to be very exciting. A lot of guys can get on base. A lot of guys who can swing it. And we don't really have many one-dimensional guys in that lineup. So I think that's what makes us so unique. And, we're going to score a lot of runs, going to have a lot of fun. The next guy up. That's what it's all about. Just keep that line moving. And so, I take a sense of pride being a leadoff guy, being able to lead things off for our team. And, I'm looking forward to it.
Who's the most exciting player in baseball?
I'm always going to say Mike Trout, just because he is. I mean, it's someone that you see every day. You've become a really good player when what you do every single year seems boring. I always say that about great players, and Mike Trout is that great of a player. To when he's pulling up, he's doing something, making a great catch, diving catch, or hitting the game, getting a big hit, homers, everything, you name it, he does it. And what do people say? Oh, that's just what he does, it's so nonchalant, but it's not, it's not easy to be at the top of your game like he is every single day. A lot of people love Fernando Tatis as well, of course. He's new, he's fresh, it's something that you just now are starting to see, he's another guy that's I like to watch him as well, but like I said, Mike Trout, man, he's still exciting. He brings it every day, and it may seem boring, it's because he's done it for so many years.
Who's got the most swag in baseball?
Everyone brings a different type of swag. It's all opinionated, right? Everyone has just a different flair about them. Like I said, I love Tatis's flair. I love Ronald Acuna's flair. The way he plays the game. Pitchers, I love Stroman's flair. The way he's so confident in himself, and you can see that when he's out there on the mound. I think there's a bunch of different types of swag when you think about it. Scherzer has his own type of flair when he's out there on the mound. But I think when you think of swag, you think of who stands out. And I think all those names that I just named, these are guys who stand out. They're very fun to watch.
How much awareness do you have of your exit velocity?
I don't have much awareness. I just try to square the ball up. So I have no clue.
You're not running back in and saying, hey, how fast was that?
No, I'm like, yeah, squared it up. Cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, good to see you again, sir.
Evan Grant covers the Texas Rangers for the Dallas Morning News. And Evan, it's probably too early to ask this question, but I'm curious, big picture, what's your sense of the short-term damage done to this franchise that their new ballpark was scheduled to open, as it turned out, in 2020 as the pandemic hit?
It probably is too early to determine that. I think that relative to the rest of baseball, I think they've done okay in terms of revenue because they had so many ancillary events this fall with the World Series and the National League playoffs, and then the National Finals Rodeo. They were able to generate some revenue out of it. But clearly, I think there's going to be some loss of novelty that will impact attendance this year. The flip side of it is they've gotten approval to open to 100% occupancy, and we'll see how many people are willing to go to baseball games this year, really for no other reason to take in the novelty of the stadium, because this team is in a rebuild. And I think that they've adhered to the steps that they want to in terms of the team on the field. But how that plays out in terms of revenue created by the stadium this year, I think that still remains to be seen, Buster.
As part of that rebuild, they bring in Chris Young to take over as general manager. John Daniels, of course, running baseball operations above him. What do you think he'll bring to the table?
I think one thing that Chris brings right now is clarity and decisiveness of not having any pre-existing connections to anybody in the organization, with the exception of really JD. And, you know, you can get into meetings with people that you've had for years and years, and you hear a lot of different voices, and sometimes things can get a little bit cloudy. And when you've got a new voice that doesn't have any of those connections, can act with a little bit more, I think, a little bit more clarity. And I feel like that's where Chris is at right now. I think you only have that for a short period of time, because eventually you hire people and you get comfortable with them. And unless you're constantly turning them over, you can kind of fall into a routine with them. But I think that his outside voice was needed. And I think that right now, this team has made a number of moves since the end of last season. And I think it all dovetails more clearly with an identified path than what I had seen the previous two or three years. I think there had been some degree of wheel spinning and maybe a little bit of lack of direction. I think that there is a clearer direction right now.
So with that in mind, how far along do you think they are in their rebuild? You know, I asked Ryan Divish the other day about the Mariners, and clearly the Mariners and the Rangers are the two teams in the American League West that are rebuilding. And I asked him, when can you expect that the Rangers will arrive back in the party? When do you think that could be?
Well, I asked Chris Young and John Daniels this last night in exactly those words. Where is the rebuild, and when can fans expect to see a contender? Because it's a question I get every day on social media as I try and explain where I believe this club is. And let me give you this answer, which is my answer, because neither one of them is going to identify a specific year or a specific time that this team will contend. But if you look at everything that this club does and everything that the club has set up, look through the lens of how does this impact the 2023 team's ability to contend? And I think that's where every move that's being made right now is geared towards. I think they feel like they can set an identity this year. I think they feel like they can take steps forward in 2022. And I think they can be fully arrived in 2023.
Sarah Langs has come on the podcast. She does a lot of course, stats analysis for MLB, for MLB Network. And she talks about Joey Gallo as a great bounce back candidate, because maybe last year he just got too caught up in trying to do things with a swing, and she thinks he's going to come back and rebound in 2021. What do you think?
Well, based on everything we've seen in spring training, she's right on the money. And I think that there are a number of reasons why Joey is a good candidate for a bounce back year. To start with, I think he got too caught up last year in the new stadium's structure. He was a little bit freaked out by the fact that he didn't think in some early batting practices that the ball carried as well to right field. And I think he tried to add a little bit more lift and a little bit more carry to the ball, and that got him into a bad spot. Then after the team came back for spring training two, he missed about 10 days because of a COVID situation, which put him behind. And then he tried to press when he got back, and it just all kind of continued to snowball. I think he has come back this year. He's changed his posture up a little bit. He's a little bit more upright. I think he's cleared his head an awful lot. He's controlled the strike zone here in spring training with great, great command. And listen, you know, he hit 5 home runs in his first 6 games in spring training. So there have been some results to go with it. And I think that's all really good for a guy like Joey, who wants some reinforcement when he applies himself to a project. And you talk to the Rangers management, and they feel like they've seen a significantly different Gallo in terms of just overall maturity and taking ownership in the clubhouse. And they feel like this is a guy in a great place. And I also want to say one other thing. We talk about Gallo's offense and his swing and all of that. Through all of that last year, Joey really committed himself to playing great defense. And with Mookie Betts moving to the National League, Joey proved himself to be the best right fielder in the American League last year. So he still made some progress on one front. And I think that this guy this year knows that he's in a position where he can establish himself as one of the great overall players in this game.
This is a completely unfair question. A year ago, I think we would have sat here on paper and said, you know what, there's a chance that Francisco Lindor is going to wind up with either the Yankees or the Mets, because you're talking about two big market teams with long-term needs at shortstop potentially, and maybe one of those teams would strike, and, you know, Lindor winds up with the Mets. As we sit here today, it really feels like the Rangers could be aggressive in what is going to be a great free agent market in the fall for shortstops. And on top of that, it's hard for me to see a better fit for the Rangers long-term potentially than Trevor Story of the Colorado Rockies. And I'm curious about your perspective on him, and maybe big picture about what they might do with that free agent class of shortstops.
Yeah. I mean, you look at a number of things, particularly their long-term obligations that they've kind of moved off the books. And a big part of that also was the Elvis Andrus for Chris Davis trade, in which they moved some money into 2021 and freed up a little bit more of their obligations in 2022 with that. So they're in a really good position to be a big player. And that's why I think in 2022, they're going to accelerate the rebuild. Trevor Story is the perfect fit in every way for the Rangers. He's a franchise player. He's young enough to really invest in. The guy still lives in Irving. All of those things fit together. But let me just say this. If Trevor Story ends up not coming to the Rangers, it's not like they would complain about Corey Seager either. So there are some great opportunities for this team, and I think that's something they have to explore. I do not want to short sell Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, though, here in this regard. He's moved from a gold glove position at third base, where he really was a standout last year, to shortstop, and he'll get the year to show that the Rangers that he can play shortstop. But I think ultimately where this team is going to look much more like a championship roster is if they move Kiner-Falefa to second base, insert one of those franchise caliber shortstops, and then they call up Josh Young to play third base, their first round pick from 2019. Then all of a sudden you're looking at a kind of infield that really has all-star and franchise leading capabilities.
We'll see what happens. All right, Evan, thanks for doing this.
Buster, my pleasure. Take care.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Monday, and we got to lead off. We got some bird sounds all the way from Brazil from our pal Francisco Campos.
Wow.
He sent two bird sounds in here. This one is a chalk brown mockingbird. And then he sent...
Wow, that was a cool one. I love that.
Then he sent in a saffron finch.
Now, there's some serious attitude right there. I think that was an alert. What do you think?
I have no clue. And I have fewer ideas on how to pronounce these in Portuguese. So we'll spare the listening audience.
Well, that's okay. You know, you're doing better than I did with the UFC fighter.
I can barely pronounce English names of baseball players. So let's just kind of leave it at that for now. Let's move on to the tweets here. We've got Amy Chapman up first. She writes in, last week you talked about LeBron James owning part of the Red Sox. And recently it seems like a number of athletes are buying into sports teams, but very few baseball players are or have done so. Why do you think that is the case?
You know, some have. Obviously, Derek Jeter did. Alex Rodriguez tried. He and J-Lo trying to buy the Mets during the course of the last fall. I don't know. Well, first off, I do think this, that, you know, in the NBA, there does really seem to be much more of a collaborative relationship between the players and the folks on management side than there is in baseball, where it just feels like you've got two groups that are on separate islands. And so the question is, you know, who's going to jump from one island to Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez to the other island?
Those seem like the guys to do it, too. Next up, we got Rick Gabler at Rick_Gabler. He writes in, hey, Buster, after hearing the 30% increase in innings pitched comment, I'm wondering if this will still be the rare year where pitchers on teams that went deep in the playoffs may benefit rather than be worn down. Thoughts?
Nah, I don't think so, Rick, just because I feel like that the teams that go, and let's say that a pitcher last year threw 80 innings, and this year, you know, they come down the stretch, they got 180, and then they have the postseason, and let's say another 30, 40 innings, you wonder what the physical toll is going to be on those pitchers, like skyrocketing upward. Now, I do think early in the year, you might have some pitchers who will actually be fresher to start the season, but at the end, maybe they're going to be worn down, kind of like a marathon, or somebody who's runs a marathon but doesn't train past 12 miles.
Last one for today. His name is Brian Stoneking, but forever he is CrossFit School of Sweat in our hearts. He writes in, does the DH rule state that the DH must bat for the pitcher? If not, shouldn't Ohtani hit every time he pitches and the Angels use the DH for whoever is the weakest hitter in the lineup that day?
Now, Brian, I have not double checked this. I know at the high school, college level, the DH can be for anybody. I think that's the case for Major League Baseball, but I'm going to make a phone call today just to double check to see if my impression is correct.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please review, rate, and follow this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Go Terps!
Oh, right. You had to throw that in. That's it for today. My thanks to Andrew McCutcheon, to Tim, to Evan, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.